Jeff Merrick, you are the father.
Really? We got our third kid? The adoption went through? Oh, no, wait a minute. You talked about Maury Povich yesterday.
No, Maury Povich show yesterday. So your boy Greg Wyshynski and his girlfriend Ruby went to Maury Povich show yesterday. I'm going to tell you three
romantic.
Quick things before we get to
that.
Isn't it? It's like date of the year, I know. Although I had a lot of people tell me as I was tweeting from the foyer and stuff of the Maury show that's like a bucket list thing for some people. So we were doing something right. But I'll tell you briefly three things that I learned about the Maury show attending it yesterday before we get to all the hockeys. The first thing is we took a bus from Manhattan to Stamford, Connecticut. So for those who don't know, Maury Povich, Jerry Springer, and the Steve Wilkow show. Steve Wilkow is the big bald bouncer guy that used to be on Springer.
But now,
he has his own show now. All three of those shows are produced out of the same nondescript building in Stamford, Connecticut.
It's the same show, isn't it? Just with a different host, essentially.
Right, exactly. Well, right? I think they're varying degrees of violence towards other cast members and people that are on the show. We took a bus from Midtown Manhattan to Stamford, Connecticut. And can I just tell you, the Maury show started on the bus. We had people smoking weed. We had people yelling at each other.
Nice.
We had people cracking wise. It was pretty great.
It was awesome.
So we get to the show. You have to stand in this big foyer. There's two shows they tape. We were told we would get to watch both of them, but we only get to watch one of them because we got squeezed out by the numbers. But they keep you in this giant holding pen for 2 hours as they prepare the show, and they have dance contests, and they knock around beach balls. It's like spring break without the booze.
This is like going to Daytona.
Yeah, as you're waiting for the Maury show. Now, a couple things I learned from watching the Maury show. I ain't going to give anything away. I'm sure there's some form I signed that would get me in trouble if I gave away any of the plot lines of the show.
Dude,
but I'll say this
work.
About the show.
Isn't it a work?
Is it like if you went to a
pro wrestling TV taping that you saw 2 days before it went to air and you put the results on the internet? Like, it's a work. Who cares?
It is somewhere between a shoot and a work. The second segment we saw, I think, was a work. But the first segment we saw, I think, was a bit of a shoot. Now, listen, two things you got to know about this show.
What's up?
There is a woman. There's a woman who works as the floor manager, okay, for the show, okay, right. Who is there to, she's got the headset, she's orchestrating all the action, whatever. It is her job to run up to people when the camera is off of them and just start going, you have to react more. You have to react more. Bigger, 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 bigger reaction, bigger reaction. You're mad. Yeah. You're mad. And like, I was watching her during the show, and as people were speaking, she was kind of speaking along with them, but not actually forming words with her mouth. I'm trying to do my best to describe this. And kind of energetically willing energy to them through her actions. Like, she's following along, almost like following dialogue, but just kind of like making these facial expressions, like almost like she's hoping that they'll see her and get to the level of agitation and emotion that she's at. So that's amazing for on one end. The other amazing thing is,
were you not tempted to record that on your iPhone?
They're very vigilant about that. I saw a guy got detained after the show, and they actually took his phone and went through it with him to make sure he didn't do anything as far as photos or video during the show. Like, they're very serious. And plus, we were in the front row, which was insane. The thing about her that was the best is that at one point during the show in the second segment, I'm not going to give anything away. One of the reasons why this dude
You don't want to spoil Maury.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Get in trouble.
There's probably a non-disclosure thing I signed.
So what's gonna happen? What is going to happen? You're familiar with Streisand effect, right? What is going to happen if you talk to us about what happened on the Maury Povich show, the Maury Povich taping we saw yesterday? What are they going to do?
First off, his entire staff is ex-linebackers. Okay, that's one
that's
thing.
Fine. What are
the
they
second thing?
Come to your apartment in Manhattan and hold you out your window by your ankles. What do you think is going to happen here?
There's
nothing.
I think some 78-year-old Jew who grew up in Maryland is going to come up to my house and beat the shit out of me. That's what I think. Maury Povich has still got it, man. Don't let the sweaters fool you. Listen, the thing that I loved about the floor manager was this. At one point in the show, this dude thought the baby wasn't his because he was black and he claimed that the baby looked Mexican.
Right.
Now, this was the part of the show that I thought was a work. During all of the arguments between the people on stage, it got so heated and so ridiculous with the accusations and playing to the camera, the whole thing, that they forgot the basic plot of the segment, which is that he didn't think the baby was his because they thought the baby looked Mexican. So the floor manager actually has to take a cue card and a Sharpie and write in giant block letters, Mexican.
Awesome.
And show it to the father on stage so he remembers to go back to the plot of the segment, which is that the baby looks Mexican.
So fantastic.
Now, the other thing I want to say is since we were in the front row, which was amazing. They go through this whole rigmarole of having you do reactions before the show to kind of get you prepared to react during the show.
Whoa. You rehearse your reactions?
Yeah.
Isn't that like kind of saying, I'll be there in a moment. I'm just rehearsing my ad-libs. Like, what the fuck is that?
I think it's, well, Merrick, it's more along the lines of like, they have a certain pitch and tone for the crowd reactions on the show, and they want to make sure that when you see a baby on the show, that everybody in the crowd goes, "Aww!" And if you see the guy that's been backstage the whole time that claims it's his baby, but we don't want it to be his baby, that we all know to boo this man and give him the thumbs down. So it's good practice, that's all.
Did she come out and give you the BS about how, as an audience member, you're actually part of the show? We rely on your reactions. You are the fuel in this. Did you get that bullshit speech before the show?
Well, hold on. Were you there? That's amazing. That's to a T what was told to us.
Really, eh? That you're part of the show? You know, it's not just the people up here, but it's the people out there. That's you. You're as much of the show as Maury is. But Maury gets all the money. Thanks for coming.
That's awesome.
Okay. So, but the other thing I need to tell you guys is.
So was he the dad or not?
I did.
Was he the dad or not?
I can't tell. I'm not going to.
Okay. Hang on. Greg. I'm going to ask you one more time. If the answer is yes, don't say anything. If the answer is no, start talking. Is he the father or not?
I don't even know who he is in this reference. First of all, the first segment they had in the show, I needed a fucking flow chart because evidently it's a town of 20 people in Georgia, and they're all having sex with one guy. Okay.
Wow.
Now listen
to me. Did they font him Town Pump? Is that how they fonted him?
Listen, in the second segment, there's a dude on stage who was, you know, maybe he's the father, maybe he's not. Something was said. The crowd gets riled up, and I'm doing my part. I'm doing my part where I am
part of the show. I am
booing the stranger that I don't know, and I am jeering him, and I am giving him the thumbs down. And as you all know, I have a very punchable face. So apparently, unbeknownst to me, because I didn't realize this. Unbeknownst to me, the guy on stage. Like, it's talking about who the baby daddy is. And it apparently, according to people in my row, pointed at me and said, "You want some of this? Get your ass up here. You want some of this?" And I didn't know he was talking to me. So I had the opportunity to participate in a Maury Povich / Jerry Springer like fight with a guest on the show,
and you didn't do it.
It flew over my head that anyone would even want to engage with me because the whole thing was such a sham.
Oh, you should have got off and taken off your jacket, and said, "Honey, meet me outside. I'll be back in 5 minutes." Oh, dude, you didn't do it. The whole thing's a work.
I didn't know it.
And what's the worst thing? You're gonna get like a broken nose, and you got a story for life, and maybe a lawsuit. Oh, my neck.
And then the other great thing is as you're leaving, you get to see all of the other cue cards that the lady wrote out. like, smile, like, don't smile, take seriously. And we found one in the garbage that said, David, tell him what you expect. And, like, amazing. It's the whole thing is so controlled, and it was a hell of an experience. But goddamn, it was fun. It was such theater. And as you leave, you feel like you need to take a shower because you are dealing with real people. Like, there was a dude on this show when he found out the paternity situation, left the stage and was legit crying his eyes out. Like, there's some reality going on in this show. I don't know how much of it, but there's something there. And basically, they come on stage for your edification. But they're part of the work, too, and that's what's so weird about it. Like,
why do they come on?
The only thing I can think of is this, because I found out a little bit about the casting process.
Yeah.
Like, they're promised a hell of a week in New York for coming
that's
on
it.
The show.
So they put you up at the 5-star. You get the run of Manhattan for
they
the weekend.
You, fly you fly in, fly you
class.
Out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can humiliate yourself and spend how many thousands of dollars on therapy afterwards? Like, do they hand you, like, a therapist's card on the way out?
No.
Probably should. Some enterprising therapist is going to earn an international reputation off the Maury show.
You know what they handed us on the way out? An empty box of pizza that was supposed to be real pizza that we were supposed to get on the bus on the way back to Manhattan.
So fantastic.
It was pretty great.
That's so good.
So there you go. That was my adventure on the Maury show. I highly recommend anybody that's in New York to try to get to that show. It is an experience like no other. You'll never see life again in the same way. And now we'll
So hang on. So hang on. So was so well. So hang on. So was he the dad? Did his little boy swim, or should he have just been a stomach pancake?
No, there's a lot of swimming on that show, but I'm not gonna let you know.
Come on.
But it doesn't matter. This, you know, dude, we have an hour podcast, right? To explain the backstory of the first segment that we saw, it was like reading Lord of the Rings. It was like, and then he begot her, and she begot him. I couldn't follow it.
All
for the
of a
life
sudden,
of me.
You've got me interested in this town pump guy. Who's hammering on everything in this small town in Georgia? I want to know when this show is on. Damn it!
He had a girl that he dated, and then a girl that he's married to, and then a side piece on the show on the panel with him.
Wow! Holy smokes! This guy's like Don Juan too many.
I know.
Holy jeez!
Don Juan too many.
Who's got the time?
Pretty great. All right, listen, that's hockey awesome. Time coming up. Jamie Baker talking about the Sharkies. We'll talk about the Eastern Conference bubble. We'll talk about suspensions. Merrick's got some junior stuff he wants to talk to. We'll talk about the Women's League coming out. And, Maddie, we do have time before Jamie Baker joins us, so maybe we could do the thing that people love us to do, which is to start the show proper, shall we?
Ooh. Whoa, Maddie!
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
See, the problem with trying to do a French accent is I only do it one way, and I don't want to be offensive to the French-speaking listeners that we have, because my French accent is always
I am tired of talking about all of the power plays.
See, but here's the problem, because what you're talking about is classic French from France. The French they speak more so in Quebec, the Québécois is closer to joual or what's called slang.
No, bring back the Nordiques and bring back Jocelyn Thibault. Is the goalie coach.
Whoa.
Yeah, Quebecers, baby.
Quebecers.
That's awesome.
You had homework, by the way, and I don't think you probably did it, but did you watch Wrestling Isn't Wrestling yet?
Wrestling Isn't Wrestling? What's that?
I think I told you about it. Maybe not. But
no.
Check it out after the show. It's my new favorite obsession. It's a 25-minute-long biography of Triple H, but all of the people in the video are gender swapped. So it's all women playing the male wrestlers. There's a dude playing China. Max Landis, who's John Landis's son, John Landis, the famous director who did the Blues Brothers and everything. He created the video. It's so smart. Smart.
Really?
Mark. It's great.
Wrestling Isn't Wrestling is what it's called.
Yeah.
I am. All right.
You'll lose your shit several times. It's fantastic.
Check this out. This is right
and,
up my alley. Okay, very good.
So Jamie Baker coming up, going postal today. I want to first off, just real quick on the Jared Bull suspension. I haven't watched the video yet. I don't know if the NHL came out with the video. I've been traveling a bit today.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, Patrick did it, yeah.
Okay, three games, Merrick?
No call, no injury, three games. He's a safe guy to go after.
That's the
Jared
thing.
Jared Bowl is.
We've talked.
We're whispering playoffs now.
Yes, that's the thing. You and I have done this show
not
for pretty much
the playoff race. He's not going to play in the. Yeah, I know.
We've done this show for pretty much through the existence of the Department of Player Safety, and we've said time and time again, especially early in the season when Shanahan was the big boss man, that they do this beat up the biggest guy in the schoolyard thing. Where they just want to remind people, right? They just want to remind people that,
hey, we're still here.
Listen, we're here. Everybody's been on their best behavior, no stretchers, no nothing, and everybody's been great. But just remember, the playoffs are coming, and we can do the same thing to you that we did to Jared Bowl.
Speaking of reminding, can I have time for a quick story before Jamie Baker gets aboard here? I remember talking to Marty McSorley one night after a night working with Sportsnet. We were having a beer, and I was asking him about playing with Dave Semenko and what it was like. And he said, you know, Dave is, you know, one of the funniest guys I ever met, one of the scariest guys anybody ever saw in the NHL. And he was very philosophical as well. I said, what do you mean by that, Marty? He says, well, we were playing with Dave, playing with the Oilers, and there was a string of games where we didn't have to fight. There was like, you know, four or five games where everything was cool. We'd get out, take our shifts, and just sort of skate around, and everybody calmed down. And we're getting dressed before one game. Oh, God, I love this line. Oh, God, Semenko's hilarious. One day before this game, getting dressed, and Marty said, Dave looked over at me and said, Marty, tonight. And Marty went, what? What do you mean tonight? As he's taping up his hands. Just imagine Dave Semenko taping up his hands, and he says this to Marty. He says, Marty, every now and then, we must remind them. We must remind them, Marty. Tonight is the night we remind them. And that line always freaking floors me. Marty, every now and then, we must remind
them. We must remind them. Wow.
What a great line.
It's so proper. So prim and proper.
I know. Yeah. He's such, it's pretty good.
The NWHL is a thing, National Women's Hockey League. Jen Neal's got a huge ass story about it on Puck Daddy today. She's been working on it for weeks, and I guess for whatever reason, the news about the league came out the same day she was writing it, so that's always good timing. But, they're paying players. Four teams to start. One in Baltimore, one in Boston, one in New York. And where was the other one? Oh, Connecticut, right, the Whale. And so we'll see how it goes. I mean, they seem to have a better business plan than the CWHL. And I know
what's
for
what is the business plan?
Well, they're going strong with sponsorships to start. They've got a salary cap, basically a budget for each team.
Okay.
That they're gonna go with and try to pay the players. They're basically approaching it as if this is a part-time job for the players, which is an interesting thing. And then there's an entire other segment of the organization that's more of a charitable angle. I don't know. They right now on paper it looks pretty good. It obviously is going to be interesting to see if a league without a Canadian franchise is the right idea or not. But
are the and I saw the headline of Jen's piece and I was going to read it after the podcast today. Is there any affiliation with NHL teams? Because that's what the CWHL is doing. You know, Calgary's affiliated with the Flames, Toronto with the Maple Leafs, now Montreal with the Habs. Are there any affiliations? You know, teams being able to pick up some of the costs. For some of the teams, whether it's travel, whether it's equipment, ice time, whatever. Are there any affiliations with any? Because that's one way that can move this along. And listen, we talked to Lamoureux a couple of weeks ago, and I really believe that, you know, if you want to do it properly, the NHL should get behind it and have their own. I think 30 is ambitious, but, you know, have their own Women's National Hockey League that runs either in the winter coincidentally with the NHL or in the summer. Although I kind of like the summer NHL sponsoring a roller hockey league, but that's for another show, Greg Wyshynski. But I've always felt the NHL should do, you know, kind of what the NBA does with the WNBA.
No, I think that's a fair, a good idea, and I wonder if the end result isn't these two teams combining their efforts at some point and making a stronger women's league. They are talking with the NHL right now about an association, but I've heard behind the scenes that even though the teams in the CWHL have affiliation with their with the pro teams in their towns, the NHL itself is a little bit wary about the league because of all of the reported financial inequities and players having to pay for their own equipment and players not being paid and that kind of thing. I think the NHL is looking for something that's a bit more solid footing to get behind. And I guess the NWHL coming out of the gate strong.
What about the equipment manufacturers getting behind it? I mean, Bauer. Did you hear the story about Bauer a couple of days ago?
No.
You gotta go and look this up and do some snooping on it. Sounds like Bauer are launching their own stores. Cut out
really?
The middleman. Yeah, Bauer is gonna launch. I want to say Minnesota is where they're starting. I know they're starting in a couple of, maybe Chicago as well. Starting in a couple of spots in the United States and then bringing the concept to Canada afterwards.
If we have Jamie yet or not, because I was about to talk about something that might. Okay.
Oh, he is there.
I'll get to this after Jamie then, because remind me about Bauer, because there's an interesting thing with Bauer in the book that I'm writing. Jamie Baker's with us. Usually at this time of year, we'd be talking to someone like Jamie Baker about where the San Jose Sharks are going to finish in the playoff race and who they're going to face in the first round and how many rounds it'll be before they're eliminated. But none of that matters because they're not going to make the playoffs this year, and it's really weird. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
You got that, just that little, eh? Like, just a little dig in there, right? Eh? how many rounds before they...
Well, honestly, I mean, based on history, Jamie.
I'm analyzing
listen,
what I heard. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Yeah, Jamie, you know for a fact what's going to happen, right? Like, I was just talking to these boys up in Buffalo on the radio this morning, and they're obviously gearing up for Tank Fest tonight between the Coyotes and the Sabres. But I said to them, I said, you know how this is going to play out. The Sharks missed the playoffs for the first time in 35 years.
Yeah.
And then they wind up getting McDavid. Like, that would be the Sharky, the sharkiest thing to ever happen would be that, wouldn't it?
So isn't there some website you can go on? There is a website out there, and you can... You click on it, and I got it from Kevin Kurz. He's with Comcast Sportsnet. And I saw it on a Twitter. I did it like 3 weeks ago or something. And you can click how many, you know, if you it's like spinning a, you know, you roll the thing and a team comes up. It took him 102 times before San Jose got the number one pick. I did it once. I wasn't even paying attention. I got San Jose the first time.
The site you're talking about, of course, is NHLLotterySimulator.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Currently,
simulated. Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Currently,
you guys are the smart guys. You start
currently.
Well said.
Currently, the
simulated
Sharks,
lottery.
Currently, the Sharks have a 3.5% chance of winning the lottery. I will press the button that says "Run the Lottery," and your winner is the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, there you go.
Welcome to the desert, Connor. Welcome to the desert. Hey, isn't it going to be? I mean, either as a player, Jamie, now as an analyst. I mean, you've been around the San Jose Sharks, radio, television, on the ice, wearing skate. Isn't it going to be weird? Like, what's going to? Because I barely know a universe where the San Jose Sharks don't make the playoffs. What's it going to be like in San Jose?
I guess we're going to find out. It's been a frustrating year. Like, the team has not been consistent, and so it's been disappointing. But, you know, the fan base is definitely frustrated. You know, I think everybody's been frustrated. So if nothing else, you know, they're not playing out the string. I mean, they haven't been mathematically eliminated, but let's not kid ourselves. They're not going to make the playoffs. So I don't know. I think this – it's sports, right? You just – What are you supposed to do? I mean, you have to look for better days ahead, and I don't know what's going to happen this summer. I don't, you know, what the owner and management, what decisions they're going to make. I just know that, you know, things ultimately have to change. You know, this was their year to try and redeem themselves from the epic loss last year to LA, and now they're not going to make the playoffs. So what direction are they going to go in? I don't know. I just know it's not going to be in the same direction that they've been going this year, because obviously it has not been a recipe for success.
What are the chances that we end up with a situation in which Marleau and Thornton are back next year, but Wilson and McClellan aren't?
See, I have no – it's, you know, it's like not my pay grade doesn't try, and we can predict things. I don't know – what's going to happen? The players, here's what I do know. How often do you see it that the players actually have the leverage? Because they have the no-move clauses. So they they get to ultimately dictate what they're going to do. And the general manager, Doug Wilson, dictates, you know, what's going to happen with the coaching staff, and the owner, determines what's going to happen with the general manager and other things. So I don't know. I think ultimately that's where everybody has to hunker down and say, okay, know, what direction are we going in so that whatever happened this year doesn't happen again?
What did happen this year? I mean, forgetting all the stuff in the off season with the bluster about sea change coming to the San Jose Sharks,
right.
From an actual hockey point of view, watching the games, calling the games, analyzing the games, what did happen, Jamie?
Lack of trust in themselves and in each other. That's the first, like, look at Ottawa right now. Yes, they're getting goaltending, but I watched them the other night and I'm like, that's not just about Andrew Hammond. That's like a good, young, fast team that they believe in each other, covering each other, they're supporting each other, they're joining the rush. Like, fun to watch, you know? I look at Calgary. I look at Winnipeg. Winnipeg hanging in there. Why are they? No one picked them to be in there, let alone they've been hit so hard by injuries. So it can't just be goaltending or, you know, special teams or coaching or this or this. It's at the end of the day, it's trust. And the Sharks have not trusted themselves or the system. And if I, you know, you look at their goals against, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I think they're 20th in goals against. They're 5-on-5 play. They're like 23rd or 24th in the NHL in 5-on-5. That's a significant drop from 6th last year. So they've been, and when, you know, you could say inconsistency, but then I got to go a level deeper. Why are they inconsistent? Why are they inconsistent? I'm like, there's a trust in their own, either their own ability, their ability to follow the system, to support someone else when he makes a mistake. That's, you know, if you don't give up odd man rushes, if a D pinches and the high forward is there to support him. But if the high forward's not there and the D pinches, then so if that happens enough, then where's the trust when someone makes a mistake that there's layers of defense behind them? And that's ultimately from a hockey standpoint, and I don't think you could pinpoint one specific area of their game that really sticks out. I can say team defense, but then why, you know? So I don't know if that's the answer you guys wanted, but that's the best answer I have right now to kind of summarize the season.
It's a great
one. Our trust and liking someone mutually exclusive. Like, when you say trust, is there also a case of some of these guys looking at the guy next to him and being like, I can't stand playing with this guy anymore?
You know what? You can say that about a bunch of teams over the course of the years. I know the New York Islanders, they weren't all best friends. They won four Stanley Cups together. It doesn't matter.
True.
When you put the logo on, when you put your jersey on, you play for each other. Like, you're in the NHL. You play for each other and you play for the logo. That's what you do. So it doesn't matter about personalities meshing. You don't know. It's not, the NHL is not about going out having lunch and a couple of beers and being buddies. It's about sticking up for each other on the ice when it matters. And then that leads, it's about respect. Respecting your teammates and doing the best you can for your teammates. You know, everybody, you're always going to have different personalities on the team. These guys, maybe they get along too well. I don't know. They're a pretty tight-knit group. So I don't see dislike being a factor. I just see on ice, during the games, after the national anthem until you go back into that dressing room at the end of the game, something's going on where they're not either sticking to the system or they don't support each other. There's mistakes. I go back to the Vancouver game, you know, recently. And if you look at the Sharks, somebody asked me, like, you could say what's gone wrong, but the three biggest losses I see are their last three games against Calgary, Van, and Winnipeg, the last game of the year against those teams. And it was February 9th against Calgary, March 7th, Van, March 17th, just a week ago, started this road trip against Winnipeg. Teams that were chasing the standings, must-win games. Last time you get a four-point game against them, they lost all three in regulation. If they just win those three games, find a way to win as a team, add 6 points to the Sharks, take two from the other three teams, and they're right. The Sharks are, we're not even having this conversation because they're right in the thick of it. And that, trusting in those games, there were key mistakes made, and they didn't support each other. And maybe the goaltender let in a bad goal and they didn't come back and respond offensively, or somebody made a mistake that gave up an odd man rush. But in key moments, at key times, they didn't make it happen as a group. For whatever reason, I don't know.
These are awesome answers. Jamie, I want to go into your bio here really quickly, if we can detour your bio in the NHL. You are the answer to one of my favorite hockey trivia questions, and it goes like this. Name me the only NHLer whose NHL career ended in Japan. Yep. Tell me about that last game playing with San Jose against Calgary.
A converted swimming pool.
Really?
Yeah, like they put the
awesome.
Yeah, the building was actually like it was a swimming pool. They somehow covered it all over, put it nice. Yeah. well, I was so I'd finished the previous year. I was in the Leafs organization, but I finished with the Chicago Wolves, won a championship with them. So that was, and we finished 10 days after, I think, the NHL, near, like, I think it was like June 20th or something. So I got a late start to my conditioning and everything that year and just went over and went to Japan. They played a two-game set. Remember, those were regular season games against Calgary.
Opened up the season.
I knew I was in trouble when we got up. Well, Daryl Sutter was the coach, and one of the guys I was competing against was Ronnie Sutter. So I had like, I mean, let's be honest here. You know, so we went over. We had seven centers, and I was I was a healthy scratch the first game, and I was on the fifth line, and we were all centers, all natural centermen. And I was the right winger, and we all shot left. And I'm like, this is not a good sign. I was the fifth guy. If I was left wing, but I was the right winger, then I played the next game. I didn't know it was going to be my last game, but actually had a decent game. Got an assist. I think I was plus one.
Hey.
Good way to go. Finished in Japan, and then came back. They told me that they were, you know, going to send me down. And I said I didn't want to go. It was too hard on my family, going up and down and moving around. So I ended up retiring. So, yeah, that's
wow. What was it like playing? What was the experience of playing hockey? I mean, you mentioned the converted swimming pool, but what else about it culturally was different? What were the fans like? What did they react
cool.
to? What did they like?
Yeah. I mean, there was a bunch of people at our practice. I don't know. I get to see the city a little bit. Like, that's what hockey, it's like kind of an extension of what makes being part of hockey so special is you get to, you know, you get to go play over in Japan. I was part of the, you know, I was on the broadcasting when we went to Germany and then had the games in Sweden, I think 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
But the whole experience going over there, I mean, it was a long way. It's like, from a player standpoint, it really, you know, you're going a long way for two games. You play two games. You try and take in as much of the culture as you can. There were lots of fans there. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's not like hockey's mainstream over there, but there was a good amount of fans and stuff like that. But you're there to get points. And then you come back, and then it's all about getting back onto the time zone and, you know, practicing
right.
and all of that stuff. So the whole thing is kind of a whirlwind because you're going so far for just two games. But
right.
you look back now in your career, I mean, if we just played those two games against Calgary to start the year, we wouldn't be talking about them. So they make it makes it special because you've, you know, done these cool things in other areas of the world that you otherwise wouldn't have done.
The other one, and that's fascinating stuff. The other one that I've always wanted to ask you about, scoring two shorthanded goals in a game, it's a pretty big deal. Scoring two shorthanded goals in the same period is frickin' enormous. Your day against Los Angeles, two shorthanded
yeah.
period.
There's a story to that. I was so pissed off at the end of the second period. We were losing like 7-2. And
yep.
we had some guys that weren't working hard, that were making a lot of money. And at the Forum, this was a true story. No one ever asked this. These guys are, this is interesting.
There you go.
So I'm going off the ice at the end of the second period, and Chris Terreri was not playing. He was our backup goalie, nicknamed T-Bone. And I go, without using the, you know, expletives, I said, T-Bone, I've had it. Like, for the first time all year, I'm like, I don't care. That's what I said. I don't give an F, you know? That's what
wow.
I said. I'm like, yeah. I was so fed up. And I go out, score two shorthanded goals, and hit the post on a 2-on-1 and another short. Almost had a shorthanded
no.
trick. We end up losing the game 7-5. He comes back, he goes, you got to stop caring more often. You were awesome.
Well, you know, because that would
have... problem. I figured it out too late. I cared too much.
That was your problem. You should have taken the I don't give a shit pill earlier on in the career. You would have been legendary. You would have been in the Hall of Fame.
Hey,
yeah, because I
Danny Baker,
did,
when he gives a shit, he's not
yeah.
very good. When he doesn't, he's awesome.
Because I think Theo Fleury scored a shorthanded hat trick one game, didn't he?
I don't know. I think
he always smokes.
Yeah, it's a remarkable.
But,
and the fact that you hit a goalpost, dude, I didn't know
you
hit
a goalpost.
Yeah, I had a 2-on-1
hit the post.
Fantastic
almost
story.
Had a shorthanded hat trick, which would make the story even better.
That's awesome.
Oh, well, you warmed You warmed my heart with the Chris Jarrett reference, by the way. That's one of my favorite goalies. Hey, last one for me, Jamie. Bringing it back to the Western Conference for a sec. Who do you like out of this big garbled mess? The Kings look like they're going to qualify. They look like they've got that ship righted. Who do you like coming out of the West this year?
People are like, oh, the Kings. I'm like, never underestimate them. Like, they've fooled us too many times. They've won the Cup two of the last three. They went to the conference finals. They are built for a seven-game series. They battled fatigue throughout the course of the year. And people can say what they want, but they've been battling getting up motivated for regular season. The amount of high-pressure games they played in last spring and, just the adrenaline rush, this regular season at some point had to just say, oh, my God, it's just like, let's get to the playoffs and the, you know. So yeah. They've been grinding it out, assuming they make it. Watch out if they get on a roll and they're healthy. Chicago, and then the other team, if they get some goaltending, is St. Louis, because I like, they're deep, you know. They've got Tarasenko on their second line, you know. You got Shattenkirk. You could say in one way, Bullmeister and Pietrangelo are your shutdown, your 1-2. Like, then you got Shattenkirk as your number 3D. Like, that's some depth. So if they get goaltending, watch out for them. Anaheim, they could potentially, if all the stars line up, there's something about that team. I don't see them as, I know where they are in the point standings, but to get through all the way through, I think they would need some favorable matchups, maybe somebody else getting knocked off. So those are my big four. And then who knows? Who knows what Minnesota, who knows with the way Dubnyk's been playing in that. So,
yep.
But I think that I would say St. Louis, Chicago, or L.A. are my, I think one of those three will likely represent the West in the Stanley Cup Finals.
And last one for me, and this comes from someone on Twitter, at Playing With Sticks. What is Jamie's opinion of Brent Burns on defense? Your thoughts on Burns on D?
Brent Burns.
Well, yeah. So I have two thoughts on it. The first one is, it's in this day and age, it's impressive when you can see a pro athlete play two different positions. How many forwards could go back and actually play D and not, embarrass themselves? So, and he came in as, he went to the All-Star game and all that. I love the fact that he can play back there and everything. If the Sharks had enough depth at D, and I have to go back what I said 2 years, last season, not this season, last season, when he was forward, I said at the time, I think he's more suited to be a forward than a defenseman just by his personality. He was so disruptive. Look at his plus minus last year. If he makes a mistake, he's not kind of the last line of defense. And it just allows him to go. Now, he does get way more minutes as a defenseman. I think that's good because he's got an abundance of energy and he's got the size. He can eat up those extra minutes. Some guys can't at the NHL, but he's so big and strong, it's not a problem for him. I love him on the point on the power play. Love him. I think he's got his release is so quick. It's the velocity of his shots and his accuracy with a wrist shot. I don't think there's a defenseman that has those three combinations in the league. So I would still, but if all the stars lined up, if you could put him somewhere, I think he can help a team more at forward. He's better positioned as a forward, but I think he's a great defenseman too. Pick your poison depending on what personnel you have on your team.
Great stuff. Jamie Baker, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us and all the great info. Enjoy what should be a very quiet and reserved off season in San Jose.
A little longer than normal. Thanks, boys. Take care.
Thanks, Jamie. Take care. Thank you.
Later.
Jamie Baker, analyst from the San Jose Sharks. I didn't know that he hit a post. I knew he had the two shorties in the same period. It's one of those, for every player you have a couple of stories you keep in your hip pocket. I'm always on asking about those too. I had no idea he had a post too. And I am pretty sure, someone out there is smarter than me and knows this, I'm pretty sure Theo Fleury had a shorthanded hat trick one game. I think he might have been the only player ever to do it.
That's crazy.
I know,
guy makes was, it makes sense with the player. I mean, involved, 100%. Obviously, but holy
100%.
Shit. 100%. Yeah. Bauer. Yeah, I'm doing this book thing,
Bauer.
And there's a part of it that's kind of looking towards the next 5-10 years of what hockey might look like. It's, you know, a lot about player tracking and virtual reality and stuff like that, but it's also about gear. And one of the things I learned from Bauer in talking to them for the book was the where it's all going right now is player customization. Now, when you go to a running store, right, mm-hmm. they have the whole thing where they put you on the treadmill and they're telling you what's the best kind of shoe for you based on what the computer tells them, the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Bauer wants to take Bauer wants to take that thought and go. Oh, the Fleury did. Cool.
Fleury did. All right.
And go several steps further with it, where it's not only going to be what pads fit you the best to reduce the energy that you're absorbing on a hit. It's mm-hmm. also what is your skating stride, and how do we customize your skate to compensate for a guy who, example, goes 3 quick strides and glides. Or you know, bends his knee a little bit more than the other guy. There's that level of customization that they're going to go into with all sorts of equipment. And I'm wondering, it's just hypothesis here, and speculation. I'm wondering if them going to their own stores means that they're going to have that kind of thing in-house. So when you go to a Bauer store, you're going into their, like, R&D chamber, and they measure everything about you.
Man, this sounds expensive. By the way, John_Ferg says, yep, Minneapolis is the first location for the Bauer store. I would imagine they would do that. I mean, I would imagine they already do that for the high-performance guys, like they're elite-level athletes.
But they want to do it for Joe Public now. Yeah.
Well, and you know what the key is there, Greg? Do it for Joe and Jane Public's son or daughter. Mm-hmm. That's where the big cha-ching is. Right? Because I'm learning this as my kids get older and start to enter hockey. And, you know, now we're looking at, you know, hockey schools in the summer and where to take the, anyway. The phrase, you know, it terrifies a parent, the thought of your kid getting passed or your kid being left behind. You know, don't let your kid fall behind when all the others are advancing their skills and all that. So as a parent, you want to, as economically as possible, look for any advantage or any help you can give your kid as he or she grows through hockey. I would imagine that would be a bonanza because so much of the marketing, whether it's equipment or hockey schools or, you know, edge work training, anything like that, skills camps, are all marketed under the same premise. What kind of parent are you if your kid falls behind? That's the string that it pulls on. So yeah. I would imagine, Wish, to your point, yeah, absolutely, that they would do that. Hang on. Bauer Hockey opened first ever retail experience. Own the moment, consumer experience to debut in Boston and Minneapolis. That's it. 20,000 plus square foot premium stores to offer unmatched mm-hmm. fit expertise and product education. What you were just saying, Greg? Yeah. I haven't read the article. John just sent it along. Thank you very much for that, John.
Interesting stuff.
That is fascinating. I'll tell you, there'd be a lot of retailers that would be knocking their knees at this one. Bauer opening up
when they open up the Toronto branch, you mean?
Toronto, Montreal, like pick any of the biggies, right? For sure. Anyone in Alberta? Wow.
A note about the playoff race before we get to some going postal and some junior hockey stuff. I'm not super worried about the Washington Capitals, but I'm still a little bit worried. I'm just a little bit worried about them. Okay, because of this. Devils tonight, winnable game.
Where'd I come from? Yeah.
Nashville at the Rangers, Carolina at Montreal, at Ottawa, at Detroit. Boston in a 4-point swing game. Huh? Ottawa's a 4-point swing game too. And then at the Rangers to end the season. It's a lot of heavy artillery they're seeing in their last 9 games of the season versus Ottawa and Boston that have a little bit of an easier trip. Boston's the weird thing is right now that the Caps are the same distance away from Pittsburgh as they are from Ottawa. It could easily be a situation where they jump up and pass Pittsburgh.
They could just go on a run. They could. And
but there's also a part of them that says,
they won't fall out.
Out of the woods yet. You're not out of the woods yet, especially when Boston has a game against you left on the schedule. You're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, you still gotta, you still have to sharpen your pencil, but I have a hard time believing. I have a hard time. Put it this way, I have an easier time seeing Ottawa out of the playoffs than Washington, even though Ottawa's on this amazing run right now. You could say to me, you know what, it's not sustainable, not gonna happen, Ottawa's gonna bow out, and Boston or maybe even Florida's gonna grab that last spot, and I'd say, yep, I could see that happening. I don't know that I can say that about Washington, just cause I just don't feel it, you know?
Depending on what happens tonight, the Canadiens, Rangers, and Tampa Bay can all clinch playoff spots. Just to make us all aware of how close we are to this madness starting.
Today is a great day to do some ironing. You know that wish?
Right.
Iron the couch with your ass all night long, because there's some freaking amazing games on this Thursday. And even Arizona and Buffalo is interesting for the, I don't want this thing. Do you want this thing? I don't want this thing. Do you want this thing? I don't want to touch that. You want to touch that element of it? You know what they have to have in that game? Did I mention this last week? You know what they have to have in the Buffalo-Arizona game today? They need to have, if you're producing this game, okay, what you need to have are two cameras fixed squarely, one on Tim Murray, the other on Maloney. Just to see the reaction when your team scores. Buffalo scores, do the shot of Tim Murray. Saying, damn it! Arizona scores. Get the shot of Maloney going, damn it! It's not the plan. It's not what we want here. Don't you kind of want the GM's not the coach's reaction. GM's reaction to the
and
goals
I'll
scored by
their
own team.
I'll steal that joke because I'm going to write a post about that, what I want to see tonight. The other thing I want to see tonight is that every time Buffalo scores, instead of doing the goal song and the horn, the whole celebration, it's just the sad Debbie Downer trombone.
Wah, wah. Oh, we scored. Oh, jeez.
What did you want to say about...
Phone call comes down from Tim Murray. He doesn't see the ice again. Right to Teddy Nolan. He doesn't get back on the ice after. What kind of nonsense is that? Oh, I just want to mention really quickly, I had a great time Monday doing the OHL Cup. That is a tournament put together by the Ontario Hockey League, which features the best minor midget teams, from Ontario. The final was the Don Mills Flyers facing off against the Toronto Marlies. With a lot of high-end guys, they're going to be starting their junior career next month when they get drafted in the OHL priority selection. Was won by the Marlboros, overtime goal by Matthew Strome. Yes, he is of the Strome family. The day before, Dylan Strome got 6 points and won the OHL scoring title. The day after that, Matthew scores the overtime winner. Funniest thing. Okay. You're the Strome family. Okay, Wish. You're mom and dad Strome. Your son scores, I think he had 1-1 on Saturday. So Ryan Strome gets a goal and an assist for the New York Islanders on the weekend. And you would think the kid who's in the NHL would be the first star, the first Strome star of the week. Not so fast. Dylan Strome gets 6 points for the Erie Otters, wins the OHL scoring title. And then the youngest, Matthew Strome, on Monday scores the overtime game winner to win the OHL Cup to make the Marlboros both the GTHL champion and the OHL Cup champion. You know you have a really good thing going on in your family when the kid that scored a goal in the NHL is your third star in the family of the week. But there it is, a great weekend for the Stromes. We always like to stay ahead of the curve here on the podcast, so a couple of names want to shoot your way. Ryan McLeod will be a high pick. Personally, I think he should be the first pick in the OHL draft this year. May fall as far as fourth to the Mississauga Steelheads. That's where his brother Michael plays, so he may end up there. Also in that game, Cody Clark, Wendell Clark's son, who's a really smart hockey player, had a concussion pretty much all season long, had some illnesses as well, but he's going to be a player. There's a kid, I think last week we talked about David Levin. Monday I mentioned it. David Levin, the kid that was born in Russia, raised in Israel, has only skated for 3 years, and he has hands like Adam Oates. He'll probably be first in the OHL draft. But the other one is this kid from Rochester, plays with Don Mills, committed to BC, but we'll see what happens at the OHL draft. Jacob Tortora, it's a kid from Rochester. He's a left-hand shot. I don't know that I've seen separation speed faster than this kid. Like, when he's got the puck, he separates himself from everybody else faster than I've seen, and I've watched his tournament for a lot of years, maybe faster than anyone I've seen at this tournament. So just a couple of names to keep in your hip pocket. Jacob Tortora, David Levin, Ryan McLeod, Matthew Strome, of course. There's actually Quentin Hughes, Jimmy Hughes' kid, is a real good defenseman as well. But those would be the ones that sort of popped out for me, and just give you a little heads up and keep you on top of things happening before they actually happen in mainstream hockey culture. So that was a lot of fun.
Indeed.
On Monday. That was good. That was a good time.
Indeed. And everybody remembers that Jeff was the first one to ever mention Connor McDavid's name in the hockey media. Everybody remembers that, right?
Remember? Yep. Everyone on this very podcast. I remember I told you, I said, hey, Wish, I saw the future of hockey last night. And you're like, all right, dipshit, what do you got? All right, Doug, how many times have we heard about the future of hockey that you've seen? And it was actually, you know what? Funny enough, that was a game at the OHL Cup. That was the opening night of the OHL Cup tournament. And I went with like, an agent friend of mine. I called Wish up right away. I'm like, dude, you have to see this kid play. And you're like, dude, calm down. He's freaking 14, Jeff. Calm down. Don't be that guy. No, Wish, you have to see Connor McDavid. I don't care, Jeff. He's 14 years old. Calm down.
I wish that this wasn't an actual conversation we had, but it's pretty much the exact conversation we had.
I'm like, dude, I'm driving back from the rink at the Hershey Center. I'm driving back and I'm calling Wish. I'm like, dude, you got to see this guy play. Holy smokes. Wish is like, yeah, okay, whatever. Have another beer, dummy. I'm like, no, seriously, guy, seriously. Anyway, there you go. So that was my little experience on Monday. A lot of fun. And it was weird being back at Maple Leaf Gardens, by the way, because the Mattamy Athletic Center has been, you know, that was the old Maple Leaf Gardens, but renovated. And, God, I walked in. This is the first time I've been in there. And the mix. I spent so much time at Maple Leaf Gardens as a kid between Toro's games and Marlboro's games and, of course, Leaf games as well. It's like the flood of memories coming back to me. Anyway, let's do our Wednesday favorite on a Thursday.
Yeah, it's time for a Wednesday favorite on Thursday.
Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Arvind Patel writes in, if McDavid and Eichel end up in the West, then will the people in the East finally stay up to watch the games? P.S. I'm from California. It hailed here a couple weeks ago, so can we finally start saying hockey instead of ice hockey now?
Nah. You know what? Here's the funny thing about out West. It was because of Wayne Gretzky that Hockey Night in Canada started the doubleheader. When Gretzky went to the Kings, that was the beginning. Yeah, that was the beginning, and the tradition carries on to this day, obviously. That was really the beginning of the doubleheader, regular season doubleheader for Hockey Night in Canada. Because of Gretz.
The chances that they're both going to end up in the West are minuscule, by the way. That would mean... Nah, I can't imagine it happening. Can you? Like, if Buffalo falls to 2, I still think they'll probably get one of the top 2 picks. But I guess the chance is there that it could be Arizona and Edmonton, right? If Buffalo falls to 2?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just looking at something here.
I think maybe... I'm going to check my lottery rules. Hockey history question for Merrick. So put on
What's
your
up?
Hockey history hat, okay?
Okay.
This is from William Brian Bassington. I'm curious what Jeff Merrick can tell me, if anything, about Michael Briere, the young star for the Pittsburgh Penguins who was killed in a car accident very early in his career. You know anything about Michael Briere?
Yeah, now they have... What was the number that he wore? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Because I'm pretty sure the Pittsburgh Penguins have retired it. Was it the first
have they?
One? I'm pretty. Maddie, can you do a quick little fact check on Michel Briere? I think
it's
he wore
Michel
20...
or Michael.
It's Michel.
It's from Michel. He put Michael. Michael's a different dude. Michael's a criminal, but he wrote Michael, but it's Michel.
He was from Shawinigan, was a decent player. It was a car accident that took his life. He bought a sports... That was a time where, you know, players, when they got their bonus money or the playoff money, you know, bought shiny things like cars. And he bought a sports car. And he was in Quebec. Number of people in the car as well, speeding, and... what happened? I remember there was something weird, because the car got in an accident, and then the ambulance that was driving him to the hospital got in an accident as well. And it was a bad scene. Like, he was in, like, a coma for 6 months, a year. It was a bad scene. He only played 1 year, maybe 2 years, at the Pittsburgh Penguins?
1 year. And his number 21 was not immediately retired by the team, but no one ever wore it again.
Right.
And Briere and Mario Lemieux are the only two players in Penguins history to have their numbers retired. Briere's number was officially retired on January 5th, 2001, just 9 days after Lemieux returned to once again wear his number 66.
Okay, so is that his wiki?
Yep.
Okay, does it have anything about the actual accident itself, like the sports car? Because I'm positive the ambulance that was carrying him got in an accident as well. Anything on there about that?
I don't see that, but he suffered head trauma, 50-50 chance of living. Nothing about the ambulance here, but maybe they don't have it.
Because I want to say, like, the ambulance, this is where the story gets even more horrific. The ambulance that was carrying him got in an accident and killed a pedestrian, I want to say. This is just that I have... I shouldn't say I hope, because it's a horrible story, but I think that's what I have in my head about Briere. I think... Pretty sure the ambulance and the pedestrian part of it's true as well, but... Yep, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Happy
Well,
on
thanks
Thursday.
For asking the question.
Yeah, it's a bad
Very
scene.
Sunny one to talk about. Alex Wilson, all hypothetical, but if Nashville and Pittsburgh have short playoff lives, could you see a Malkin for Weber trade between the clubs? I'll never say never on a Shea Weber trade. A Shea Weber trade.
All right.
I'll never say never in a Shea Weber trade. I just don't know. I feel like Pittsburgh does five things before they ever trade Malkin.
What would those things be, though? Because if they bow out in the first round, honestly, I know Mario will go berserk. And I don't think anyone would be safe outside of 87.
New coach.
You could see a new coach?
Yeah. Yep. Add a significant piece to the wing. To replace what they lost with Neil. You know, let's see a couple things here and there.
Where's that money going to come from?
I don't quite know. That's why it's a bit of a pickle. Because those two guys make a lot of dough.
You wonder if the play there, if they bow out in the first round, if you want to talk about the coach, if ultimately that play is Babcock.
Yep. Totally.
With player personnel decisions as well.
Yep. Michael Audet, what's up, guys? Mostly for Greg, but I'm going to Star Wars Celebration next month in Anaheim and plan on wearing my MVSW t-shirt. Which celebrity would you most want me to get a picture with while repping MVSW? That's a really good question. If you can find someone cosplaying the Sarlacc. You know what the Sarlacc is, Merrick?
Oh, of course, the Sarlacc. Left-hand shot, played in Shakuta. Sorry.
That's Yuri Seacack. The Sarlacc is the giant mouth in the middle of the desert that people fall into and then they digest for, I think it's 10,000 years.
Who comes up with this?
George Lucas.
Who makes this stuff up?
George Lucas is the guy who occasionally allows the sexual part of his brain to transfer to film. You know how lightsabers are phallic and they blew up the Death Star by depositing their seed and down a shaft and then he put a giant vagina in the middle of the desert.
How Alfred vagina Hitchcock
dentata, was, no less.
Right. Oh yes, and how Alfred Hitchcock was had his heart broken by a blonde when he was young, so all blondes in his movies must die. Yeah. Very subtle, Alfred. Very subtle.
Alfred, what do you think about changing up the look of the gal?
No, she must be blonde.
She must die.
She must die.
Finally, in this episode of Going Postal, we go to... Where the hell are you? Oh, there he goes. Trevor Krause.
Wow, wish.
Would love to hear you discuss on Going Postal the possibility of doing daytime weekday playoff games, which is something that I tweeted about during the NCAA tournament here, the basketball tournament. Trevor wrote a post on Puck Drunk Love about the possibility. I haven't read the post, but I'll check it out after the show. But Merrick, what do you think about the idea of... what do you think about the idea of having a full day of hockey to kick off the Stanley Cup playoffs by doing daytime games on a weekday, just like it's March Madness and the games start at noon?
Is hockey penetration deep enough that people will book off afternoons?
Maybe for a day.
Not like in Canada, in Canada, absolutely they would.
Right.
Would they stateside? You know it better than I do.
Well, nationally, no, but locally, yes. Right?
I don't know that hockey's there yet to do that. It's a cool idea. It really is a cool idea. Hmm. It'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm behind it for one day. I think it could work. All right, let's get the hell out of here. Not sure on tomorrow for me. What about you?
What am I doing tomorrow? No, I have, you know, I get phlebotomies regularly, right? So tomorrow I get a phlebotomy booked from like 1 to 2:30, so I can't do it.
What now?
I've got to get leaked. I have too much iron in my blood. So you know how you get it out? You get a phlebotomy. You know what a phlebotomy is?
What?
Just a needle, and they suck half a liter of blood out of me every couple of weeks. Normally I do them once every couple of weeks, so I do them in the morning. But I couldn't get one for the morning, so the only one that I can get is in the afternoon.
You'll get a phlebotomy, and your blood will flow out of you?
Oh, Jesus. How long do you think it would take? I'm going to ask the nurse tomorrow. Because I've always wondered this. So I'm sitting there in the hospital, and I'm watching, I get hooked up, and I have this thing about needles, and I just can't stand needles. Love tattoos, weirdly, though, But I have a thing about needles. And so when they spike me, I sit there and I stare at the blood, you know, going through the tube and into this bag. And I always think to myself the exact same thing. How long would it take for all the blood to leave my body? Like if the nurse is like, oh, there's a special at Tim Horton on Timbits and coffee. And like all the nurses left and forgot to come back for me. How long would it take before I bled out and I was dead?
There's a surprising amount of blood inside the human body. It literally took me 3 days to clean up the trunk.
If there are any nurses in the MVSW listenership right now, or doctors for that matter, how long? Is it a matter of minutes? Is it hours? Because the phlebo doesn't take very long. It's like 20 minutes, sip, sip, you're done. Usually I try to go for a long run before I do my phlebotomy, so the blood's really pumping and the blood's really flowing. Then it just gets out there real fast. But how long would it take until I bled out completely?
Well, at least now we know what we're doing at the next live show.
Live phlebotomies. Yes. Oh, hang on. Mason Little, Markham Stouffville Hospital represent. That's where I'm going tomorrow, Mason. You know it.
By the end of the show, you're just like, oh, what's the matter? You're a little lightheaded? Do you need a cookie there, Chief? You a little lightheaded?
No, the thing is, man, you'd be feeding me booze, too. I'd be drunk so fast, all the blood leaving, replacing it with red wine. And you'd want to do shots like an asshole. I'm like, oh, I wish. That'd be you.
Mark Stern, Hitchcock, Wyszynski's Hitchcock voice is the same as his Bane voice. That's not so true. This is Alfred Hitchcock. We have to kill the blonde. This is the Bane voice.
We have to kill the blonde.
See, totally different.
Oh, it's very subtle, I know. That's why you're a genius.
It's the little tweaks.
Yeah.
See, my song goes... Dun, 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 dun. See, it's totally different than Under Pressure.
Right, exactly. Ghostbusters is not I Want a New Drug.
Ray Parker Jr., poor bastard.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's all stolen from Marvin Gaye. We know that now. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll talk to you Monday then. Enjoy Tank Night. Enjoy a weekend of hot hockey action. And we'll talk to you then. Bye.